John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And we want to continue taking your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, getting your reaction to, you know, what was said about the Seahawks, you know, whether they've had the biggest loss of any team in the offseason, where that all stacks up. So I want to get your reaction, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, you know, the thought, which is national, not local, that maybe Pete's lost a little bit of the steam in the locker room, and maybe the, you know, where that's all going. Let's go to Ken. Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you, man?
Very good.
So I am going to say that it's standard knee-jerk reaction for the media whenever they talk about the Seahawks, because we've always kind of been the black sheep. And since Pete's been here, you know, he's taken these undrafted guys and done well. He's made, you know, patchwork linemen work okay. I mean, we should have been 12-4 last year if it wasn't for the Blair Witch Project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a line that was really nothing besides, you know, the center and Pocek, I think. But, so no, I think they're full of it, and I think we're going to be fine. And I'm excited. I've been a season ticket holder since 03, so I am excited for the season and to see what Pete and his crew can do with these guys. And I also had a quick question for you, John. George Fant. I haven't heard anything about him. Do you know what they might have in mind for him, you know, depending on his recovery?
Yeah, it looks like they're going to try to have him on the right side. That's at least what Pete was saying right at the end of the rookie minicamp. That would be the plan, that he's going to go to right tackle. Now, that doesn't necessarily prohibit him from flopping both sides, but I think, you know, with Jamarco Jones that they took in the draft in the fifth round from Ohio State, you know, he'll get more work at the left tackle position behind Dwayne Brown. So the plan right now for Fant, at least, you know, is recovering from the ACL, is to play on the right side, you know, competing against Jermaine Ifedi. Clearly, it's going to be tough for him to do it. And, you know, the challenge that he faces is one that, you know, he learned everything on the left side, having no experience on the offensive line. And so now he has to completely turn his eyes around and his arms around and try to do everything different. That might be a tough transition, but that's the plan right now for Fant, to move over to right tackle.
Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate that, and love your show, and we'll hope for the best this year.
Okay, that sounds good. Ken, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The thoughts on this team as far as, you know, the good, the bad, the indifferent. I mean, again, I think the good thing is you can see there's a major change right now as far as trying to, you know, gear up the energy of the team. And, you know, and I think that's what happens sometimes. And I, you know, at some point, and Pete was really expansive on this part, talking about the idea that, you know, if some guys weren't buying in, they weren't there. And I guess for whatever reason or whatever thoughts there were, that he started to think that maybe Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman weren't completely buying in. And if that's the case, then they're no longer here. And those are big losses. And, of course, the unfortunate thing is the injuries took away Cliff Averill and Cam Chancellor, because those guys definitely bought in. But now it's a matter of, okay, you got to show – it's kind of a, I guess, a recharge as far as the efforts right now to come back and, you know, see if they can bounce back and get everybody back on the same page.
John, do you think – I know that John Schneider had said that last year, having a 9-7 season, you would have thought they only won two games. And he was talking about how somber everything was. I think they almost set their own bar so high that even before all the losses, people were a little disappointed in their last year. And I think that might have something to do with the way the national media is reacting. Because I was trying to think of a comparable, and I think that the Panthers are kind of in a similar situation where they've had Cam Newton. They've had their quarterback this whole time, but they've had a lot of turnover with Josh Norman and their Kelvin Benjamin heading to the Bills. And they, I don't think that they've gotten as much flack from the national media.
No. Yeah, I think that's true because, you know, everybody looks at, and of course they did have a playoff season last year, but, you know, they didn't look like a Super Bowl team. I mean, they were going through a transition with the running game, you know, getting away from Jonathan Stewart. I mean, he was still there, but they had Christian McCaffrey and all that. And Cam just really didn't have a good season. I thought that his numbers started to drop off, but, you know, Ron Rivera was able to keep everything going. And that's where, and having covered the Steelers for so long, I mean, that's where you see the good organizations, and this is a good organization. I mean, you have to go through this resetting because you can only have players for a certain amount of time. They get old, they wear down, and at some point you need to try to, you know, get a new group in there, but it's hard to equal what you might have had before. But as long as you have the quarterback can get things right, and this team has a quarterback. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The plan right now, of course, I think is a good one. I mean, they're just trying to get younger, vital, and of course, again, that's where I look at the 2011 season as the one that this one compares to, because, you know, they've got four great players out of the draft in that draft in 2011, and then kind of, you know, set the tone for where they were going to head in 2012 and 2013. That's why, I mean, the expectations of the Super Bowl probably aren't there, but I don't think you write off the playoffs.
No, I definitely think saying that they had the worst offseason is very extreme. Mm-hmm. What team would you put in that category?
I look at Miami. You don't get better losing your best players. I mean, you don't get better trading Jarvis Landry, your best receiver, guy that's been to the Pro Bowl three times. You don't get better letting Ndamukong Suh go. And, you know, they want a better culture, I guess, in the locker room, but they're not as talented of a team. And so I didn't like the fact, you know, they eventually let, years ago, they let a good guy in Olivier Vernon go. I mean, how do you get better when you let good players go? That just doesn't seem the case. And I thought that they do it. And again, I think there's going to be a step back in Kansas City. I think that they anticipate that. They're trying to, you know, regroup a little bit. I kind of still wonder a little bit about Baltimore, because I don't know if Baltimore got any better. I don't necessarily think they got worse. At least they addressed the wide receiver position. Arizona, certainly, they're taking a major step back, you know, going through the coaching change, the quarterback change, you know, offensive line change, all those things. So those are some of the teams that I look at that are taking some major steps back.
Yeah, I feel like the Ravens have been taking steps back ever since they paid Flacco way too much. Just has not gone their way.
Yeah, but that's the funny part, because maybe not in the last year, but I still buy into Flacco. I still think he's pretty good. I think he's a guy that still has good skills. I mean, I had him as an elite quarterback, and I think clearly it's safe to say that he's not playing like an elite quarterback now, but I still like the guy. I still think he can come back. I mean, hey, you only have four quarterbacks that have gone to the Super Bowl and won in the AFC since 2001, and he's one of them. And so you, what about all those other quarterbacks at different teams that took the chances and tried to play but didn't? I still think he can bounce back, but I think now you can see what the plan is. They drafted and traded up for Lamar Jackson with the idea that they wanted to eventually just wipe out Joe Flacco, which is probably going to be after this season.
Yeah, he's one of those where it's tough. I think that they did have some major injury issues the last couple of years, which didn't help. But I think that there's a line with quarterbacks where you have to figure out whether, of course, if you have Aaron Rodgers or most likely Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, you give them what they want, and you think that's better than, you just have to take care of that quarterback because they are going to get you wins. But I think there's a certain level of quarterback where if you pay them too much and you can't put players around them, they're not as good as you thought they were.
Right. But I still laugh at the argument. It's like, well, geez, I mean, the quarterback eats up too much of the cap, and, you know, maybe you should trade the quarterback. It's like, oh, yeah, you can trade the quarterback, but you're not going to be any good. You can get players, but how many players are going to equal what you're going to have at quarterback when you have a good one? And that's why, you know, you take the quarterback position as the most important on your team. You know, the thought has always been, defenses win championships? No, not now. That was the 70s, maybe the 80s. But once Joe Montana, the quarterbacks from 1983, started to emerge, what ends up happening is now the quarterback becomes that much more important. And so the quarterback can make up for all the mistakes that you can have in personnel, mistakes on the field, because he can make that one drive to win you the football games if you can keep it close. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up, we get out the report card. We get to grade some of the stuff going on in sports. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the Report Card with the Professor.
And each day, the Report Card we bring out to grade all that's going on in sports, whether it's going to be good, bad, indifferent, crazy, smart, whatever. We grade all this, trying to put attaching grades because, again, there's some wacky stuff going on. There's some good stuff going on. We grade all of that, and of course that's our mission here, to make sure that we get all the good grades that are going to be there. So Maura, what do we start off with?
Well, first off, you know how UCF, after their 12-0 undefeated season, the only undefeated team in the FBS, how they got left out of the national championship game, but they've been claiming that they were the real national champions. Now it's kind of created a feud between Nick Saban and UCF coach Scott Frost. Saban told USA Today, "We've only had one undefeated team, and that is really hard to do. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for their team and what they were able to accomplish. And they can make every claim that they should have been in the playoff. I get that. But we have a system, and it's not fair to the people who went through the system and earned their way playing really, really good teams. I mean, really good teams and really tough games. It's not quite fair to them for somebody else to just decide to claim a national championship."
Oof.
Yeah. Then Frost told a local station, KETV, "Alabama probably has one or two national championships they claim that weren't necessarily recognized by everybody as well."
So, I mean, again, that's so typical of Saban. Because, you know, he takes everything personal, and Central Florida, I mean, they had such a great year, but, you know, I mean, he's right about the fact that they have it. But of course, he's in the SEC, and SEC has such a big advantage that, you know, you can get teams that don't even win the, you know, the top game, or don't even win, that can get into the Final Four. And that's what I think is so unfair for him to do it. So I have to give him a C minus. Because, again, it's like Nick just being – because he's sitting there as one of the great dynasties in college football. And so now he's going to try to take away from a program that's, you know, had a 12-0 season, felt it was a little betrayed.
Yeah, people are calling it petty.
Yeah, it's petty. Yeah. Not Bryce Petty, but it's petty. But I think because, you know, Bryce Petty's probably a D minus just as far as his play. But, no, it is petty, and that's so typical of Nick. That's just – I know him too well.
Maybe you learned it from Belichick.
No, he did. That's one of the things I think he did learn from Bill.
That's awesome. Next up, we have, you know, Bartolo Colon was in town pitching yesterday, mm-hmm. had himself a pretty good game, unfortunately, against the Mariners. But he took a comebacker from Gene Segura, and it got him right in the gut.
This is no better competitor than Colby. He knows exactly what he can do.
Let's hope Bartolo Colon is all right. That ball hit hard off of Colon. He got the out.
Tell you what, he's a great athlete, though. I think he gets his glove on this. This is a rocket back at him, and he didn't get his glove on.
But he's got a little protection there, you know?
He's got a little bit. That ball's hit hard.
Look at him. He's grabbing his belly like that. It hit me. Yeah. You said he has some protection.
He has some protection there. I put, like, hey, since I haven't played this last year, I got a little protection.
That's not right. It's not right.
So it got him in the gut, right?
Yeah, and they're saying it's not right to make fun of him, but actually Bartolo Colon ended up saying through a translator that it was okay because he's got some padding there, so he knows it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a kind of a B because it was kind of a funny sidelight to the game. And again, it's just amazing. I still remember watching the game that he pitched against the Astros earlier this year, and he just flat out shut them out. But, I mean, I don't know. Would he be considered to be the fattest player in baseball?
I don't know. Ashley's shaking her head no.
No? Who would be the fattest player in baseball, Ashley?
I don't know if I actually want to answer that, John.
Oh, okay.
There are a couple heftier gentlemen that have taken the mound. We'll just say that.
Okay. Rotund.
Yes, that's a great way to put it,
Maura. You get some fatsos. I mean, first off, I mean, it's bad enough to be big and have a last name of Colon.
Well, Cologne.
I know. It's it's spelled Cologne.
It is.
So it's like that is another unusual aspect of it. But no, I think we have to give that a B because it's kind of an amusing part of, you know, last night's game. And I think the fact that he owned up to it and kind of laughed about it himself, I think he understands. But I mean, what an amazing guy to be able to do what he's able to do at the age of 44.
Yeah, he's going to turn 45 this week, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You think he's going to eat big? I mean, a big dinner?
Probably.
How many meals do you think he eats a day?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I'll do some research.
Okay.
Next up, I want you to kind of retroactively grade this. This is Charles Barkley after game one of the Rockets-Warriors series.
I am just so depressed right now.
Tell him, Chuck.
Hey, listen, I am hurt tonight.
This should not be a time of depression. This is like the third time in the playoffs you've said, I'm so depressed. I think one time was when Toronto was losing or Philadelphia?
Yeah, because you could turn it, because...
And why are you so depressed tonight?
Anybody who thinks the Rockets going to win a game or win this series is an idiot.
You're declaring this a sweep
this
after one game?
This is over, Ernie.
There's no way you're going to beat the mighty Golden City Warriors. One or two guys taking all the shots.
No, you can't earn it. Yeah. Listen, you just see this game.
Go Cougs,
man. The Rockets can't beat them.
Wow. I mean, he's the best. I mean, is there anybody any better? And what's really great is what he's done and what, you know, with Shaq and that and some of the arguments, because now it's all part of the drama. And I love the fact, I mean, because I still think Golden State's going to win the championship because I just think they're special. But what I like is that, you know, he can just take the one opinion and say, hey, I'm not going to back down. It's like this thing's over. And so I have to give Barkley an A in this one because he's just, again, every night you look forward to what he says and what he's going to do and now some of the arguments he's going to have.
Yeah. He gave him a little bit of credit last night. He kind of backed down from that, but I thought that was pretty funny that he was pretty much calling it over and mm-hmm. calling it a sweep after the first game, and the Rockets came back and proved him wrong for sure. That was a good win.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you know, because I think right now the Rockets are the only challenger there to Golden State. I mean, you know that Cavs are starting to wear out. I think that you can see now. Again, we'll find out on Saturday if they have much left. But I think the gas tank is starting to empty, and they're just not getting enough around LeBron. I mean, they need to get more. But what I also like is that I looked at the Celtics and thought that even their starting lineup, despite not having LeBron, was still better. Their four were still better than the other four on the starting lineup that's not LeBron. And so I thought they could win, and I think they're going to get better coaching. In this case, though, they'll still go play Golden State if Golden State wins. And then what happens is that they don't have their top two players.
Yeah, it's going to be – I'm really excited to see – if the scrappy Celtics team can make it, mm-hmm. I'm really excited to see if the great defense they've been playing could actually translate to either one of these offenses. I mean, the Rockets and the Warriors are pretty high-powered offenses.
Exactly. What else do we have?
Last up here, we have the Cleveland Browns picked to be the team on HBO's Hard Knocks this year. How do you grade that one, Professor?
Probably a C. Again, it's like, okay, I think that there's much intrigue in seeing how Baker Mayfield is going to go, how it's going to be with Hugh Jackson having Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator, the better, you know, having Greg Williams on defense. I mean, but the problem is they're still a one-win team. And we were arguing about this morning. You know, Mike Salk was saying that he heard speculation that some people think that they're going to the playoffs, which is physically impossible. I mean, it's totally impossible. And so I can't have to give it a C because, again, it's nice to be able to get a team that might be good, but you're still getting the worst team in football and a franchise that has just been just horrible for so many years. And so, you know, are you really going to learn a lot about them? I still go back. I wish they would have done it a couple years ago because it justified. I mean, they had 14 draft choices, and I thought only three could even play in this league. They were that bad. And so now they come back and they have, all this, getting back. But, they almost don't have a choice because who's going to really watch them? I mean, are the Cleveland Browns really going to get good ratings on HBO? I'd say no.
I'm intrigued. Just I think because of all the dysfunction, you kind of want to see what actually goes on behind the scenes there. Mm-hmm. I have this theory that the last few, I think last year was the Bucks, so we'll see what happens with them. But before that, they had the Rams and the Falcons. They had the Falcons, Devontae Freeman's rookie year.
Right.
And he didn't really see much playing time, but then he emerged as a star. And they ended up going to the Super Bowl. And then the Rams, were awful. Jeff Fisher was still there, but now look at what they've done. Mm-hmm. I have this theory that Hard Knocks, they have a bad year that year, the teams that are on it, but then they have a pretty good year the next year.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens again, but kind of interesting to see. All right, so you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. So text away at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
We have a ticket giveaway coming up in the next segment. We'll take care of that. But in the meantime, we are going to take your text questions. So text us at 710-710. And Maura, what do we have?
509 says, Professor, what led you to cover football as opposed to covering baseball, basketball, or hockey?
Well, I almost screwed that up because, I mean, football was my first love. I mean, because I used to go to Steeler games with my mom when I was 6 years old and would watch and study the game and all that. So football, and again, in Pittsburgh, football was it. I mean, football was one of the biggest things that you can cover, I mean, both from high school and all that. And so, I started covering it and had the fortune of doing it all the way in high school and all that, and then of course all through college with 25 different jobs. But where I almost screwed it up, I get hired by the Pittsburgh Press, and still wanted to do the football stuff, but at a couple junctures I was almost going to get off of football and go into baseball because I thought that'd be kind of fun. And fortunately they thought, no, you can't do that, you're too important on football. And so I didn't do it, and wisely so. But football's always been my game. It's been where I grew up. It was, football was it. Western Pennsylvania was always big into football, and so was I.
425 says, love the show, Professor. Which Seahawks tight end do you expect to lead the group in receiving this year?
Probably Ed Dixon, because he's going to be the main starter, and we'll see how they work Disley in there, and we'll see what they end up doing with all the other tight ends. But no, I think that Dixon's the one that's going to be on the field most, and so if he's going to be on the field the most, then he's going to be the one that's going to get the most catches.
Professor, you might like this because you're good at hating on the Browns. After our last segment, the 509 texted, it's a cockroach comparison. When you put the lights on the Browns, maybe they start moving.
I don't know about that. I mean, if you're a wounded cockroach, you're not going to move too well anyways. And so I don't know if that really applies in this case. But, we'll see how they can end up doing. But it's going to be a struggle. Really going to be a struggle.
253 wants to know who you think will be the breakout rookie this year for the Seahawks.
I think you have to start with Rashad Penny, because Rashad is going to get the opportunity to see where he's going to be as a starter. I mean, I think he can have a good season. I think you can see from what you can watch so far, he looks very, very good in the practices. Now, again, see how that translates when they're tackling and doing all those things. But I think he's the one that's going to have the breakout season.
206 says, hey, Professor, with six of the rookies signed, is Shaquem the next one to be signed, or are the Seahawks going to cut him?
Shaquem
Griffin.
Are they going to cut him? No, he'll be one of the next ones to sign. I mean, they'll have everybody signed. I don't think that's much of an issue right now, because six of the nine are done, and it's not out of the question that the thing's almost done. But let's put it this way, as excited as he's got to be, because this is the team he wanted to be with. I mean, you think he's going to not sign a deal and not be with his brother, his twin? I mean, this is a chance of a lifetime to live a dream, and he's living the dream. So he'll get the deal done. Don't worry about him. He'll be fine.
509 wants to know who you think will be the sneaky good NFL team in 2018.
Sneaky good. I'd have to say maybe Tennessee, because I think that could be a sneaky good team. Now we'll see with Mike Vrabel as the head coach whether that can carry over. Are they going to get enough out of the offense? I mean, that's going to be a big question mark. But no, I think that could be a sneaky good team.
I like a lot of the moves they made, but speaking of Hard Knocks, I watched when the Texans were on and he was there. He yelled and cursed at those linebackers nonstop.
Mm-hmm. I watched him when he was in Kansas City doing the same stuff. I mean, that's his nature. He's going to do that.
The 206 wants to know, have you ever written an article that you regretted later?
Not really, no. I mean, you know, sometimes you don't write the best and sometimes you don't get the most, but I don't think there's one that I really look back and say, boy, I wish I didn't do that. I mean, that's where the fortunate part is. And you've done so many articles through my career that I don't think there's any that I regret.
541 says, JC, why does baseball have a Canadian team and basketball or football don't? Well, basketball does.
Yeah, basketball does because they got the Raptors. But, you know, football just has not. And you have the CFL, and the league doesn't really want to compete against the CFL. I mean, certainly there's been always the thought of having a team in Toronto or having a team in Montreal. Just never has happened. And again, these teams are so hard to be able to pick up on. It's just going to be very, I just don't see it.
206 says, Professor, what's the most you would pay for a haircut? I pay $25 plus tip.
Yeah, in fact, I need to get one today, so I'll pay 20, but the most I paid is probably 50, 52 when you had to go to a stylist. I mean, not that it was worth it for me to go to a stylist for my hair, but I'd say somewhere in the 50s one or two times, but not often.
253 says, a lot of negative talk about Mike Solari lately. Do you believe he will be worse, the same, or better than Coach Cable this year?
I think he's going to be fine. I think he's a very good coach. I don't know where there's any negative talk about Mike Solari anywhere. I mean, he's always been known as an impeccable coach. I mean, his tour here when he was with Mike Holmgren was good. I mean, every place he's been, he's done a good job and was able to get good things done.
I double-checked with Tom Wassel on this one because he's a big baseball expert. The 360 says, JC, correct me if I'm wrong, but Barry Bonds never failed a drug test for MLB, right?
That's
my
correct,
friend
yeah.
And I are in debate right now. I say no, he didn't. He says he did. If no, why no Hall of Fame?
Because of the speculation that he did. That's the main one. So no, he's never, to my knowledge, he's never failed a drug test, but the allegations were certainly there. And
I think he was on that Balco list as well.
Yeah, he's on, because he was on the Balco list, but again,
everyone already had the suspicions.
Mm-hmm, but he never tested positive. So, but he has to take the fact that everybody kind of sensed and maybe they knew and maybe they were wrong. But again, I don't see anybody coming back and changing their opinion on that.
425 says, will Columbus, Ohio, or Portland ever be in play for an NFL team?
Portland has a possibility, but I still think it's a long shot. I think they probably have a better chance for maybe a baseball team. But remember, I mean, the league likes 32 teams. They like the fact that you have a balance, and you have, and you can see that the in baseball wants to get the 32 teams because you can have it is a nice way to do it. And I just don't see any kind of expansion happening. So could they? Yeah. Will they? Probably not.
425 says, where will Ted Ginn Jr. play next year, and how many years does he have left?
New Orleans. He's still there. I think he has a couple more years left, and so he still has speed. I know that Carolina felt that they made a mistake in letting him go because they didn't have any speed once he was gone. So I think he can probably play two more years.
253 says, we've seen defensive players go from the Hawks to other teams and see less success. What are you expecting out of Sherman next year in a new scheme?
I think he's still going to be fine. I mean, I don't know if he's going to play at a Pro Bowl level. That might be difficult, but I still think he's going to be pretty good. Now, again, you have to see how he is coming off the Achilles. I still look at Brett Grimes, who had the same age when he had his Achilles tendon, and he has a couple Pro Bowls to his credit since then. Now, he wasn't as good as he was before then, but he still was able to be good enough to go and stay at a Pro Bowl level, so I think he can do that. But the first year back is going to be a little bit more difficult.
509 wants to know, Star Trek or Star Wars?
I guess more Star Trek, although that's probably the unpopular thing to say because, again, there's so many Star Wars fans naturally, and it's more popular than Star Trek. But I still like, because, again, it was kind of in that transitional stage in television that he just caught everybody by surprise and how good it was, and he had so many good stars.
425 wants to know if Chris Chambers, the wide receiver, will be in the Hall of Fame.
No. I don't. The numbers just aren't there, and not even close, unfortunately. So, you have to really put up good numbers to be a receiver, and receiver is one of the harder positions to get in because there's so much competition. So Chambers for the Dolphins, no.
509 wants to know what Andrew Luck's status is for week one right now.
He's going to play. I mean, even though he's still not throwing, he is still on pace to be able to play, and there seems to be total confidence in the organization that, even though they're taking it slow and they're being very cautious, that he should be able to go.
253 says, is the Hard Knock show mandatory?
What it is that what they, you know, the teams that qualify are teams that did not have a coaching change and teams that have been out of the playoffs for two or more years. That's how you qualify. And so what they try to do is find a way to coerce you to accept, you know, if, and so remember, they're competing against a couple other teams, but once they go in and if you don't have a good reason for it not to happen, then they'll mandate that you do it.
Right, that's it for text today.
Okay, and of course, we have a giveaway coming up here in the next segment. We'll give you all the information about that because it gets you into the Felix Hernandez infield grass bobblehead night coming up. We'll do that coming up. But in the meantime, we'll check in with Dave Grosby, and you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Dave Grosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, we got a ticket giveaway coming up for Saturday, Felix Hernandez infield grass bobblehead night. And so we have two tickets to give away. The fifth caller right now at 206-421-3776 can win two tickets to Felix Hernandez's infield grass bobblehead night. That's this Saturday the 19th when the first 20,000 fans will pick up a Felix Hernandez bobblehead and seed to grow their own grass. Ground crew is not going to be included. 206-421-3776. And joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And David, how are you today?
John, doing just fine. How are you?
Good. And so now your dream is coming true. It looks like Vegas is two games away as an expansion team from winning the Stanley Cup.
Well, getting to the Stanley Cup.
Well, getting to this.
Getting to the finals. Yeah, yeah. They're in the Western Conference finals, and it was did you happen to see any of the video of how they started that game last night?
I saw some of the things that they did in the pregame.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, some of that. I was like, it's ridiculous.
I happened to tune in and watch, because CBC, when they show it, they always just show the arena experience with no audio. And so I watched the whole thing, and it's on Deadspin. It is hilariously over the top. They're having an extremely good time there. And then they scored 40 seconds into the game, and here they go. This is a team that had a better record than they did during the year. So it's a series is not over yet. But I tell you, I haven't seen any stories yet, John. There's got to be a lot of nervous sports books.
Oh,
Vegas
yeah.
was 500-1 to start the year. And I suppose a few people threw just a couple of bucks down just to have it. And who would have thought that ticket might wind up paying what it might pay? And it was a great game last night, and I heard a guy describe it in the early rounds of the playoffs, you know, and it's one thing to be a real good expansion team like they are, but that you got to remember that part of that is everyone playing together for the first time. I mean, you can get good players, but to become a good team, obviously, you need normally to play together, and their coaching staff has done an amazing job of getting those guys to play like they've been teammates for years, and a good goalie can erase a lot of mistakes, but they have another gear. I mean, just in watching them play, they have another gear that they can step on that really seems to befuddle teams. And Winnipeg was flying high coming in. They had knocked off the team with the best record. They'd won, I think, three of the four games in Nashville were won by Winnipeg, so they played great on the road. And then last night, first road game, boom, give up a goal 40 seconds in and are chasing the rest of the way.
I mean, and it's great to see because, again, you'd never see this in sports, an expansion team that can be this successful this early.
Well, John, you remember the only other expansion team to have a winning record in their first year.
Who was that, Carolina? Or?
No. Got to go back further into our past, into our old neck of the woods.
Who would that be?
The Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay.
I think we're the last ones to have a winning. Now, I don't know. It may have happened since then because there have been a lot of expansion teams since then. But remember, with Paul Brown, they started 8-6. So just having a winning record would be an amazing accomplishment normally for an expansion team. This is beyond belief. And look, it's not just about that they rolled over and allowed them to take all these great players. Again, like, you've got to be able to play together to be excellent, and they have managed to do both at this point. And just like you said, two games away from going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And it's such a great sporting event. And again, it's great to see Vegas celebrating like this. I'm not talking about celebrating after the game.
I know what you mean. Putting
on a show.
I know just what you mean. I mean, putting on a Vegas-style show for the game. And then you know what it is? It's a hockey crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a regular old-fashioned hockey crowd everyone is bought in down there. I mean, it was a curiosity kind of at first. There was some criticism about how much money it cost them to bring the franchise in, some grumbling about ticket prices. All that has gone by the boards now. It's electrifying that city. It really is. And And that's a place, you know, as we've talked about it, you know, everyone knows Vegas, and it didn't really have much of an identity for itself except as tourists. There's one other time where this happened, and that was during the TARC era with UNLV. And of course, that was something that everyone in Las Vegas took a heck of a lot of pride in, whether or not they went to school there. I mean, that was the last time that they were really prominently on the sporting landscape for one of their own teams. And that was, that was 20 years ago, really, when it hit its zenith, even longer ago than that. So it is kind of a cool thing to see that for the community, it's been a tremendous, overwhelming success.
And all it does is kind of gets you a nice little appetizer before they get NFL football.
Right, exactly. Although we'll see if the Raiders are as successful as an expansion team is, and what the vibe will be with that. But, you know, there's also now a story out today that they're considering, and I don't know what they're waiting for, Vegas for an NCAA regional basketball tournament. That'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
I've told you that I expect we'll see before too long an NCAA tournament finale there, maybe in that football stadium.
And it does look like the fans understand hockey, or at least have learned hockey pretty fast.
Well, yeah, when you got a good team and you're going to the games, it's easy to learn it. It's easy to learn it, and especially when you're winning. I mean, that obviously encourages you to do so. And look, remember Jack Kent Cook had the great line about Los Angeles when the LA Kings moved there a long time ago. He said that they told me 500,000 Canadians live down here. What they didn't tell me is they all hate hockey. Which was a great line.
Mm-hmm, true.
In Las Vegas, you got a lot of expats, obviously, as well. So you probably had some built-in hockey fans there who were ready for it, but are probably just over the moon at their good fortune at how good that team has been.
I
remind everyone, I mean, you know, when it comes to Seattle, you've got a brain trust putting it together that is second to none. I mean, second to none. Todd Lewicki, that's his Tampa team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the result of his impetus, his involvement over there, and there. They've been a championship team already, and playing at a very, very high level. You've got the chance to have a very similar sort of start here, but I wouldn't assume it. It's really incredible that they've gone this far, but I would assume that Seattle, if the rules are to remain the same, will have the same successful start like Vegas did. But this is off the charts.
On another front, the Mariners get a bad loss last night, although Christian Bergman was fantastic for seven innings, giving up no runs.
Yeah, he was, and just when they needed it, although too bad, a little bit of an implosion defensively for the first time in a while, late in the game in the ninth inning that cost them the game. Bergman was terrific, though you kind of know what you've got with him. He's I don't know if he's ever pitched that well beforehand, but this is not a 22-year-old guy. This is a veteran who's been around. Really, the best news was that Nelson Cruz didn't break his foot, mm-hmm. which everyone who saw the replay, saw the play happen during that day game on Wednesday, you know, I'm thinking the worst. I think everyone's thinking the worst. He took it right off the top of his foot, and the way he reacted, it sure looked broken, which would have been about par for the course, would have made it one of the worst days in Mariner history.
Right.
Fortunately, it didn't work out that way. He's only going to miss a couple of games. But without him and Cano in the middle of the lineup, they're obviously going to be struggling and scuffling a little bit. And the benefit is they're playing a team like Detroit who's not particularly good.
Mm-hmm. I do think that they got a big break with the schedule to start out. I think that has allowed them to get the good start because, again, they haven't – I mean, so many of the teams, particularly those on the road, and, again, I probably study the schedule more than most, mm-hmm. And I'm a big schedule advocate, but, you know, I think that has given them the opportunity because when you look at it, I mean, what they've scored like about maybe one more run than they've given up, yet they're six games over 500.
Even with more of their games on the road than at home.
Right.
They played really good on the road. Well, the schedule giveth, the schedule taketh away. They got a rough schedule later on in the summer, but that's to be worried about then. Now they've got they're in the stretch of 16 of 20 at home, all against teams under 500. So a chance to make some hay if they can withstand the injuries bug that sort of hit them a little bit.
Boy, are they unlucky with the injuries?
Unbelievable.
I mean, it just doesn't stop, does it? I mean, that's, which is remarkable.
Doesn't seem to, although it plagues all teams that deal with it to a degree. But right now, I'm knock on wood. I mean, the real place they can't afford injuries is their pitching staff. And the pitching staff has, for the most part, with the exception of Rosso Ramirez, avoided injuries.
Mm-hmm. So that's...
But June is going to be tough. I mean, they go through a stretch in June, John. From June the 11th to the 24th, they play the Angels, the Red Sox, the Yankees, and then go back and play the Red Sox again. So tougher games are coming.
Oh, yeah, and that's you got to expect that. That's part of the deal when it comes down to it. So what's on Bob Grouse and Tom today?
We'll be talking with Bill Krueger at about 2 o'clock about where the Mariners go from here.
Okay, well, that sounds good. That's Bob Grouse and Tom coming up next. We will be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.